Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, that works. And so does the stapler. And also at our website, stevebick.com. It's going to be a fun morning. It's an incredible weekend, and it got more incredible and deeper and more intriguing and challenging and whatever else with the Sunday draws. Plenty of other action on Sunday, and I don't know how much of that we'll actually get to. Maybe just a couple of references, because when you've got the kind of Saturday that we got tomorrow, you know, come on. How much, how much can't be buried in Sunday, unless you're a correspondent with the Daily Racing Form, like Marty McGee, Dave Gredig. They'll be with us this morning with Churchill and New York action. In fact, before I talk about what went on yesterday and how it plays into today, including a carryover sequence, pick six at the Big A, the Big B at the Big A. that's what the... With the banana panophobe. somebody, where's Jason Beam? Jason, you got to come up with some sort of a song parody for Belmont and Aqueduct. Because I can't wait till this Belmont meet is over so I can stop referencing Belmont and Aqueduct. It's just Aqueduct. Let's give you the lay of the land, because this is a pretty intense 3 hours. And the challenge today, those of you that own stopwatches, clockers, Clocker John, Clocker Dave Norton, the clocker formerly known as Pace and Dave, pull out your stopwatches, because we've got to keep everybody to keep this train on the tracks, because there's a lot of guests and a lot to cover. Marty McGee will join us first in about 10 minutes. We'll look at this closing weekend at Churchill, and obviously the spots that tomorrow that feature the Lucas and the Akak, some good maiden races, good allowance, actually terrific allowance goes as the eighth, and obviously when you have the Derby winner returning to Churchill and Rich Strike in that Lucas, Art Collector and Hot Rod Charlie look like they'll spar on the front end. Should be interesting. We'll get plenty of opinions. In fact, between Marty and Schaap and Scully, we'll get plenty of insight. All right. So Marty joins us first, and we'll also kind of peek ahead a little bit with Marty to Keeneland, because with every passing conversation and article about whatever horses, everything is referencing Breeders' Cup and next week's Fall Stars weekend across the state. So, Marty McGee to start us off. Callie Francois, who we never got to last week, my fault. Callie's going to join us. Action moves from Hi-Ho, Pimlico, over to Laurel for the winter. And we'll check in with Callie. They've got a very nice stake sequence again this week in Maryland. Free Brad Free. As free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, because he's Brad Free. And he'll join us at 9:45, I doubt. there's certain triggers for me like that, that just, Eddie Keneally, he's magically delicious. They've been saying them for years. I don't know what's wrong with me. Then hour two, Dave Grenick, and I confirmed Dave's visit by sending him a bagel emoji, because I always bring bagels to he and Jay Pridman, Belmont Week. So, but Jay's actually going to save me what? To figure a bagel and cream cheese, $2.75. 275 times 6. Yeah, listen. Dave Gredig, from Belmont this morning, I'm sure. And we'll get Dave's take on the big weekend over the Big A. And there's also, of course, as mentioned, referenced, pick six carryover today into the Friday card. And it's a good card. The stakes, obviously, tomorrow in New York, starting with the Woodward, where Life is Good is a prohibitive, obviously, favorite. And, you know, is also from the one hole going to be, you know, chased after. So, the Grade One Woodward. I'm just thinking, the Woodward had to have been run at Aqueduct during the renovation. So this is not, I'll look that up, actually, how many other Woodwards have been run. Because now the Woodward, with the years at Saratoga, now the Woodward has been run at all three venues. The Miss Griot, which is a six-pack, and Be Your Best is the favorite, but she doesn't have to win. The Belmont Turf Sprint is terrific, and there's some very interesting decisions you got to make, and some horses that are very attractive prices, including Yes and Yes for David Donk, Dancing Buck for Michelle Nevin. Michelle Nevin looks like she might have a very good day tomorrow. And, Chewing Gum. A couple of horses have to kind of snap back. Arzak, David Aragona made Arzak 4-1, and I don't know. It's hard. You're going to have to, that's a referendum on his form cycle. Is he tailing off, or, you know, is he still, you know, still in the zone? The Champagne is intriguing to me because David made Verifying the 9-5 favorite. And I Verifying is maybe third for me. Top Recruit at 5-1. I'm sorry, if Top Recruit runs back to that race at Ellis, how does Top Recruit not figure in here? Certainly is the right price. Gulfport 2-1 outside for Steve Aspison. Chad sends Blazing Sevens, who feels like a fairly attractive number at 8-1. Champion's Dream. It's funny. Both of the two-year-old stakes Saturday, they both have six-packs, and they're both tricky. They're not, sometimes not all six-horse fields are created equal. And then it ends with a state-bred allowance going six on the main. All right? So that's the Saturday action in New York that we'll talk about with Dave. And then, of course, we will also certainly reference the Pilgrim and the Frisette in particular that were drawn yesterday, all right, for Sunday. Scott Shapiro after Dave. Looks like Hammer at the bottom of hour two. Rick, if you're tuning in already, if you're up and about, which he probably is, Hammer fully recouped from his late in the meet ordeal at Kentucky Downs and then the taxing drive home. Hammer at the bottom of the hour. He's got a bunch of things, and he was doing handicapping when I talked to him last night. Scully at 10:45. Nick Tamaro, top of hour three. We'll get Nick's take on New York. Nate Newby joins us at 11:15 from Santa Anita. We'll get the entire landscape for the meet from Nate. And Popo, to close things out, I did leave a little bit of an opening here just in case. And in fact, in that opening, because I don't think I'm going to get to John Hernandez, I hope you're aware of Prairie Meadows Iowa Bred card. Their meet is wrapping up today, tomorrow, and Sunday, and they've had a very nice meet. The card tomorrow is all stakes, and it is almost all stakes, including four quarter horse activities that include a couple of $50,000 stakes and then a couple of what look to me like futurity types and derby types. Not that this is my specialty. There's a futurity for $129,000. That's the Jim Bader. And there's also a straight derby, Polk County Derby, 440 yards for $112,000. So the card starts at Prairie with four quarter horse stakes. There's a maiden and then an allowance. Then it marches into a series of stakes for the Iowa breads. And it's for the most part, when you look at these races, they're nicely matched. There's a few horses that have made impressions nationally on the two-year-old level. If you have not seen Tyler's Tribe, and I'll get a hold of Tim Martin next week. This is a really nice, a hell of a nice Iowa bred Sharp Azteca gelding. So he's going to be around forever, and won by 16 at first asking, then won the Prairie Juvenile against open company by 8, came back against the restricted company in the Futurity, then won by 12. And then won the freshman by 15. It's comical. 24, 36, 46, 51, 52. He's won by a combined 53 and a quarter lengths. Yeah, Tyler's Tribe. Tim owns this horse with Tom Lepick. Was bred by Clifton Farm and Derek Merkler. And yeah, there's been a few references to this one. Was a $35,000 Iowa bred sale purchase. Unbelievable as a yearling. Sharp Azteca out of a Mission Impassable mare. So, very clever and a serious horse that 3 to 5 on the line, but will be 1 to 9 by the time they open the gates. And then there's 8 Life Grand, who we took a real shine to coming into Saratoga for KVH. Kelly Von Hemel. And 8 Life Grand for RPM, the homebred out of Cat Doro, the Not This Time. So, you know, Iowa's not far from Kentucky. Not hard to send your mare, and not to take away from the Iowa, you know, potential Iowa stallions, but the most part, they go out of state and bring back, you know, some nice in utero products. So 8 Life Grand in the Iowa Breeders Derby, and Tyler's Tribe in that Iowa Cradle. But then there's also the Sorority for the Phillies. It's a nice card. They're pretty well matched. The Donna Reed. We love the Donna Reed, and we certainly love Donna Reed in It's a Wonderful Life and in her own Donna Reed show. Iowa Breeder Oaks, and then things close out with the Branstead, and the Dan Johnson Sprint. It's a really nice card, and I didn't want Prairie Meadows to go unnoticed. And they've got a very exciting jock race going on. If I just happened to come across this morning. They are down to Alex Berzer and Kylie Jordan are separated by 2 wins. Kylie's got 77, Alex Berzer 75. So it's a kind of a fun thing to track here as the meet winds down. John Arnett is going to win the trainer's title there. And, of course, Alan Poindexter is going to win the owner title. So, good season at Prairie, and we'll recap it on Monday, so at least I got that lick in. That's it. Marty, Callie, Brad Free, Schaap and Scully, Grant Eigenhammer, Nate Newby, Nick Tamaro, and Popo. All right, so let's get here. Let me get going, and I can reach for Marty, and I can tell you that yesterday, it's funny, Dave Grenig, if you saw it, Dave had tweeted that things had been very chalky to start the meet, pretty much almost 50% favorites in New York, and then all of a sudden the wheels came off yesterday. That Shadow Dragon, the Army Mule, and I tell you, Army Mule, if you haven't, we've discussed it, Army Mule getting winners by the bucket now, and delighted for John Sikora and the Hill and Dale team. I think, what did it say, is 15th, 16th, something like that, and it's funny, they didn't fire in July and August, but September, now October, they're coming with a rush, as they say, with alacrity. Another one of my favorite. This one, probably my favorite word, alacrity. Let's get Let's get the one and only. Let's get Marty McGee in here, and we'll start digging in. Yeah, 1680 for that one. 3860 for Unbridled Bomber, the Jimmy Ryerson. Jim Ryerson! And Big Everest was one of the chalky ones in that sequence. And you had one other, you had another big price that was floated. There was that 11-1 Happy Sophia that started the sequence for Randy Prasad. And first-time starter Canarsie. Some had a very big, he had a $1,200 try in that maiden special, New York bred fifth race. I hear Marty McGee in the background. Good morning.
Loves Bucket. My right fielder won that race for Randy Prasad yesterday.
Well, and I love it. And in fact, Mig the other day, when we talked to Mig on Wednesday, he mentioned about how Luz had to put the stick away in a race over the weekend that he would have won if he, you know, if he could have maybe, you know, gone one more time or, you know, two more times. It's a quandary, Marty.
It is, because it's Nerf whips. And, you know, 25, 30 years ago, if they hit you with that whip, it would hurt, you know, on your, if you took it to your calf or whatever. But they've modified the whips, and anyway, I was watching the Naira show yesterday, and they replayed the Rachel Alexander and the Woodward, and Burrell must have hit her 40 times. I don't know how many times.
Yep.
You know, it was a lot.
Yep,
the whole bunch. So she might not have won. I mean, we'll never know if she would have won or not. If, but anyway.
Well, there's a school of thought that says that that contributed to her maybe getting a little sour. That I've seen that revisited.
Maybe. Yeah, you know, Talamo too yesterday or last night, because in a win where he hit the horse seven times instead of six, they said either you take a 10% penalty or you take the days. I guess he didn't have any good mounts last night, so he took off. But it's, you know, making these guys count the strokes is just absurd.
Yes, it is. We've talked with a handful of people. We had that conversation with Todd Fincher earlier this week, who's looking at having a horse, and of course, Senior Buscador, the brother of Sheriff Brown. We're going to see. We're going to see about him, and we'll talk about him. In fact, we can talk about him right about now, Marty. Let's dive in to the weekend at the Downs before the scene shifts to the site of this year's Breeders' Cup.
Well, Senior Buscador is one of 10 in the When and You're In ACAC, which is the 9th of 11 tomorrow at Churchill Downs. He goes to 4:55 Eastern. Speaker's Corner, the even money favorite. I mean, his two of his last three defeats are both easily explainable. He got beat by Flightline in the Met Mile, and then he got beat by Life is Good and the Nayroot at Belmont. But then he was kind of an inexplicable fourth. I'm thinking maybe he was a little too sharp, a little too keen. He tends to do his best, relaxing down the backside, and it will be up to Junior Alvarado, if he gets him out back tomorrow, to do just that, get him away cleanly from the one hole and resist what other speed is in the race. And, you know, if he runs his race, runs back to some of these big buyers, he did get a 114 in the Carter in April. Speaker's Corner, definitely one to beat in here. So I've got it picked Speaker's Corner. Excuse me, I've got Twilight Blue over Speaker's Corner, and Folsom, I'm thinking the open air outside box might give an edge to Twilight Blue, who was just gritty as all get out in beating Intrepid Heart on Million Day. And you know, going for a price here, he'll be in the 8-10-1 range, I would guess.
Well, and he really I mentioned him yesterday when we were going over the fields as they were drawn, and he's really taken a nice step forward here. And you know what's interesting? He's out of a Rahi mare, and Joe Sharp did try him on the grass to debut, going back to Ellis last summer or two summers ago as a 2-year-old, and then he put him on the dirt, and he's just steadily advanced. And even though there was sort of a period where it didn't look like he was, you know, going to turn into something, he did not. I'd love to talk to Joe about this at some point, because he stuck it out Also out of, you look not just the Rahi Mare, but he's by Air Force Blue, the Warfront Stallion. He's bred up and back for the turf, and yet here he is knocking on the door of triple-digit buyers. He feels emergent, Marty.
Yeah, that's where I got him picked. And, Joe won the second last night with my best bet, Palace Coup, in a terrific ride by Gerardo Corrales. So, I'm riding the Joe Sharp momentum right now.
I like it. There's Folsom, too, who is also in nice form coming out of the governor's win. I was intrigued. I was with Glenn Wismer a week ago Monday at Presque Isle. I was shocked when Surly Furious showed up in the box. Is he going to run?
I assume so. I mean, that was what it's going to be 12 days later.
Yeah.
I mean, Glenn's old school. He won the Kentucky Oaks, right? Love me not, ridden by.
We talked about this horse. Give it to me.
1992, 30 years ago. Yeah. Fabio Arguello Jr.
Look at you. Look at you. Who's better than the Mart?
So anyway, no, this race is the ACAC is for Speaker's Corner to lose. I think that the opening half mile will have a lot to do with the outcome in terms of, what kind of rhythm Junior can get Speaker's Corner into.
Well, and I do want to also mention the presence here of Three Technique and the great Jason Cook story, which we celebrated Derby weekend, and just came through and broke through on July 4th when second, beaten just a neck by Cody's Wish, who then turned around and won a Grade 1. So Three Technique and Jason Cook, there could be an exciting chapter. How about him and his daughter going to Breeders' Cup? How great would that be?
Yeah, Peyton, both my daughters babysat her when she was little. So she lost her mother when she was 2.5, and it tugs at your heartstrings. But she's like 12 or 13 now.
Root for the best story.
Joe Hirsch.
Joe Hirsch, baby. Marty, let's talk about the Lucas, because this actually came up very interesting, and it sure feels like Art Collector and Hot Rod Charlie are going to be sparring on the front end, and then everybody else is going to line up where they like to. King Fury, Happy Saver, the Derby winner Rich Strike, and Chess Chief, they're going to probably pair off. You're going to have two up front, two in the middle, and two in the back. What's your take here?
Well, I thought that Art Collector was faster early.
He is.
Than
he is.
Charlie.
He is.
So it might be a merry-go-round race. And, in that regard, I kind of feel bad for Eric Reed, because he's got Rich Strike in a race where maybe the distance isn't quite far enough and the pace scenario does not favor a back runner like him. So it looks to me like Luis Saez will do all he can to play cat and mouse with Tyler, who takes him out, of course, from Pratt, because Pratt's otherwise occupied in New York tomorrow on Hot Rod Charlie. But it looks like those two go 1-2 the whole way around, with Happy Saver closest to them, and it certainly wouldn't surprise me if it came Art Collector, Hot Rod Charlie, Happy Saver, just like that. And I don't know how much we're going to learn from something like that, maybe if you had another speed in there to mix it up with Art Collector, it might come out different. This would be one of those races where in running would be kind of nice to bet, see where they are at the three-quarter pole and see how it's going to shake out before you made your bet. But you can't do that, except for I know a guy who does it on some site. Anyway, yeah.
I will say one thing before we touch on a couple of other spots. The presence of Happy Saver between the two of them is interesting. And if you go back to the Met, I mean, obviously he's coming out of the mile in the eighth, Whitney. But if you go back to the Met, where he chased Flightline home, essentially, and by all rights, he's been closest to Flightline as anybody. Johnny's tendency, and he got to know him in the Whitney, Johnny's tendency is to go forward, and I would not be surprised. I mean, if you look at the splits in the Met, 22-3, 45 flat, 108-2, and Happy Saver was within 2.5, 4.5 at the second call, and 2.5 at third call, and that's enough speed, enough tactical speed to keep a presence in here. And I think if Johnny doesn't see right away, if he doesn't see Tyler engaging, or at least probing, I would not be surprised if Happy Saver attaches himself to Luis Saez and Art Collector's hips.
Yeah, I mean, that's all well said and done and on paper and stuff. But once they get out there, I'm sure that Luis is going to do all he can to nurse on a one-length edge as long as he can.
He's going to get prompted. I think these guys are too smart to just, you know, at least I hope so. I hate the prospect of just, like you said, a merry-go-round. Let's talk about this eighth race, Mark, that is really good. Here's an 11-horse field going also a mile and an eighth, so it'll make it easy for Andy to make the figures. And there's a lot of quality to this. Strong quality from Cassie feels to me like, Art Collector Light when it comes to, you know, being on the front end. If he gets any kind of, you know, soft opening, I think strong quality takes him a long way. But Tepo, Tis Ride Time, Prince's Spur, Open Road, Complete Agenda, they're all nice prices, and they're all okay.
And you left out my top pick, Tiwanaku, for Amos and Edgar Morales, who's had a breakthrough meet here at Churchill.
Yep.
You know, you forgive his last at Saratoga, and you go back to his three-back win at Churchill over the surface. He got a 95 buyer. That puts him in the mix there. So, you know, talking about an 11-horse field, I think Ben Huffman's done yeoman's work in terms of filling 14 days, the overnights after Sunday. Not having turf at your disposal is a major hindrance to a racing secretary, but they've gotten through this meet, and kudos to him. And now we're on to, I'm sitting here doing my preview of the meet for Keeneland next weekend. It's going to be fabulous, as always, with all these Breeders' Cup preps, and looking forward to that.
Mark, let's touch on the seventh for a second. It starts the pick five, and, I went through this. I did the pedigree work, as I am wont to do, and these are two-year-olds going a route of ground. I landed on two horses that are 10-1 and 20-1. Curlin's in Charge from Dale and your man Talamo. Curlin's in Charge is 10-1, and I love this spot. And coming over to the dirt where he belongs. And then DVH, Donnie Von Hemel. Pappy Wolf is 20-1 and has every right to be part of this.
Yeah, I've got Curlin's in Charge on top also. That was a sneaky good race.
Hey, now.
Kentucky Downs. He drew in off the AEs that day.
That's right.
It was the 13th horse.
That's right.
And, you know, those races really came up tough down there. I think on the, just going on the two turns here off that one tightener might make him tough. And then I've got right next to him Desert Wolf, the Pletcher horse out of a solid Saratoga maiden race. So I got a 7-8 there in the seventh.
Nice. So we both landed on Curlin's in Charge. All right, good. That encourages me even more. The Greg Foley barn brings back Obesos in the sixth race for Obesos fans and for Foley barn. Foley barn is very popular. I thought those two, Obesos and Surveillance, seemed like it came down to those two.
Yeah, I've got it picked. I've got K-Vod, my best bet in there. You know, I'm thinking Gate to Wire again for my man, for Hartman. So, you know,
Wow. All right.
Back here to Churchill to Hartman. Hartman
he's
does
been
well,
murdered.
And I'm going to go with him right back at
him. No, he's been tough. Just a minute left with Marty McGee, DRF McGee. You mentioned doing the preview for the meet. Marty and Fall Stars Weekend, I've been nursing possibles and probables for next week, and certainly plenty of names came up with the likes of Kenny McPeak and Steve Asmussen this week. What are you noticing? How about Fort and Cave Rock? Cave Rock will stay home, but Fort chose the Futurity over the Champagne. There's some other obvious big names that we're going to see next weekend.
Well, I think I talked to Kenny this morning about some of his horses, and he's seriously considering running Classic Causeway, the three-year-old,
yep,
against Older, and turning back from some of those longer New York races to the mile in the Shadwell, or what do they call it now, the Coolmore Mile.
Coolmore.
Back to $1 million. So that would be interesting seeing that. Ivar, is not going to run on that. He's just going to go straight to the Breeders' Cup Mile. That's what Paulo Lobo told me after the Woodbine Mile. So, you know, we got the Spencer and we got the major 2-year-old events, the Alcibiades and the Breeders' Futurity. You got the Phoenix and the TCA, all kinds of good stuff coming up.
DRF McGee, everybody, we'll talk next Friday ahead of the start of the Fall Stars weekend at Keeneland that will certainly showcase any number of participants in the Cup 4 weeks hence. And Marty, you got some Wadi Petona trips coming up.
I might have to take a picture of the Petona Wadi sign and just express how wrong it is. You know, they put that in 2010. But, you know, I will be well ensconced in the press box by the time we talk next week.
So, excellent.
Digging in for a long weekend.
Marty McGee, everybody. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, buddy.
There you go. Marty McGee and your Churchill Downs action from Marty's perspective. That's interesting that, boy, he made Kayvon his best bet. Did I mention, what was it? It was last weekend. I'm sure I have it. I promised to take a picture of it because I mentioned it. But all three, Marty, Marcus, and I think Kenny Peck, all three on the Pocahontas Iroquois card, all three of their best bets won. And it was three races out of four in a sequence. Do a great job. All right. I like that we both landed on Curlin's in charge. That was interesting that he 10-1. And then that horse of Donnie Von Hemel's at 20-1 makes some sense to me as well. And I'll maybe talk about it later with Shap and Scully. Right now, bringing in Callie Francois from Laurel. And last week, first of all, I'm so remiss. I felt terrible. We couldn't get to you last week.
Oh, it happens. That kind of morning, those mornings happen all the time. Listen, we're back at Laurel. We're back into routine. At least I'm back into a routine. So I think we might get a little bit better luck just off of that alone. So no worries about last weekend. We had a great handle last weekend over at Pimlico for the closing meet. Some nice races that we had also as well. That was a good day last Saturday.
I mentioned I ran quickly through the winners the other day, and, you know, Can the Queen and the Sensible Lady, 90 buyer. Caratari for Brian Lynch, 98. Smash Ticket, Rob Atrus came in and took the money in the Weather Vane, and then the Polynesian, Benevengo, the Gormley, wins the Polynesian. A nice 3-week stint at Pimlico, and now it's a home game for you, right? Because you live in Anne Arundel County.
I do. I actually live in Howard County, right next to the track. So none of our listeners really know where that is, but essentially I live about 10 to 12 minutes from the track. So life has gotten mountainously easier for me. I've been on the road. I've kind of been semi on the road for the past 5 weeks, and while I have no complaints about it, I am very happy to be back. Like I said, in my routine, ready to go.
Well, that means you can get on horses in the morning and work horses and then run home, freshen up, and come back for TV.
Well, actually, it's a bit. So that's what I was doing all for the past 5 weeks. I would get on horses, rush home, and then head off to Pimlico or Laurel. But now I just do everything. I just get ready here. So the jocks room is open. So So it's very, everything really runs a bit like a conveyor belt as far as where I need to be and at what time when we have races over here at Laurel. So yeah, I don't leave. Once I get here, I got on 5 this morning, but yeah, once I get here at 5:30, I'm here all day long. There's no moving around for me, which I absolutely love.
That's great. Well, the office put together a terrific card tomorrow. I mean, I've been, frankly, everywhere anybody looks. That also includes Delaware with the Governor's Day action and the Rosenberger. I talked about Prairie Meadows, obviously the big tracks for the weekend, you know, with the big stakes. But the 2-year-old stakes, the traditional 2-year-old stakes for fall in Maryland, the Laurel Futurity and the Salima, both, and the Chaladin, the Twixt, and the Japan Turf Cup. This is a nice card, Callie.
It's a great card. It took me a little bit of time to really truffle through it. You can get a cup. There are a couple horses. And again, these, as you mentioned, these are these two-year-old stakes races, so there's a lot of unknowns that we're going to find out here at Laurel on Saturday, post time starting at 12:40. First stakes starts about 12, just a little bit after 12:30, but this Laurel Futurity, again, a lot of these stakes, they're just so well put together. So thanks to Marie, our stakes coordinator, for doing a wonderful job. But again, you can get a couple of, I'm going for a couple of prices underneath here today for tomorrow, Steve.
Well, let's touch on this. And there's a ton of MTOs, just in case, in the Laurel Futurity. 13 entered, 4 are MTOs. So
yes.
Anticipate a field, because I think we're okay, right? That the storm's not going to reach mid-Atlantic for tomorrow.
The last time I checked, the radar was early this morning, and it doesn't look great for us to have a clear day. I've heard multiple things, because I was talking with Adam Campola, our steward, yesterday, who doesn't think we're going to get a sprinkle, but I won't be surprised if these MTOs might be used up a little bit here in the fraternity. I'm hoping that's not the case, but we'll see what happens. It's kind of, we like to hold off as long as we can so we don't cut off any missed opportunities, especially on the turf at this time of year.
All right, let me just, I'm on Dark Sky, and let me see what, rain starting this evening. Ugh, continuing until tomorrow afternoon.
It's not looking great. And unfortunately, I'd love to give you the story that I got yesterday, an opinion I got from Adam yesterday, but I don't think that we're going to get that lucky.
Ugh. All right. Well, that's. That's a little distressing. All right. Well, then, I thought maybe it'd be another day before it reached the Northeast, but all right. Well, then give us the A and the B options. Who do you like on turf? Who do you like on off the turf?
It's hard because I haven't looked too much into these off the turf horses, so I'm basically just going off. And again, a lot of these haven't been tested on this type of track if we do get off, so I will dig. Where I go is where I go, how the sire produces on a wet dirt. But with horses that are on the turf, Dandy Handyman for Kerry Breon. I like that. I really like how, yeah. This one is out of that Colonial field. This is the first one to race out of this field, so I'm just giving a bit of the benefit of the doubt. But dueled with a nice Chad Brown horse, left the field by 6-7 lengths, locking horns with the other dueler. I saw that last work actually on social media. Kerry posted it on social media. It looked great. I talked to Kevin Gomez. Kevin Gomez is really high on the horse. And again, you do have Outwork, who's 18% with these second time starters. The barn's pretty high on the horse for a jump trainer, so I like that. I'm definitely going to go at a little bit of a price with that. And then I go with the two-horse Data Man for Grand Motion with Victor on this horse. The sibling, Aldo, was a winner of the Hilltop last year, and Graham thought enough of this horse to run him up north to see what they have. With Graham, it's 50-50 whether he runs them short or long on the turf. I'm going to be asking him about his decisions and whether he runs horses first, long or short, first time out. But I do like the fact that this horse had a gate work after this horse has run several times. If you go back, it's a gate work at Delaware. I think especially in this kind of field, whether it's on or off of the dirt or on and off the turf, that's going to place this horse up a little bit more forwardly. Who do I go with also underneath? I go with Fire Baron underneath. It seems like it would be the obvious horse coming from Kentucky Downs, but the mare, the dam, has yet to produce a turf winner. I think, again, this horse was running first at Saratoga. I think that's always a hard ask. May have flattened out a little bit, either from bouncing a little bit at Kentucky Downs, but going back to the mile and 16th is definitely, I think, might be helping this horse out today. Who else do I have underneath? I have Otago underneath, actually. for Kelsey Danner. I like Toledo on this horse. And of course, this is your MTO pick, right? Spitestown goes great. This horse off the turf event last time out. But the dam also going back, the dam is a grade three long on the turf winner. Mom's Deputy is also produced. She's 27% with her turf producers. And then underneath at 12-1, I go with Quincy. If I could put in a fifth, Quincy Cafe intrigues me. This is a half to Chi-Town Lady who not only just won the test, but also won the Bolt's Landing as well. Lacey Gaudette is 25% stretching these horses out. Had a couple of tries on the turf as far as works go. Now they're not promising, but again, this horse was also entered for the With Anticipation, was a trainer scratch. Just at 12-1, Mendelsohn, 15% first time with those turfies. Intriguing, very intriguing at a price.
And before we move to the Salima, because I want to do both two-year-old races, I do want to mention the 9 in here from Anthony Pecoraro. We Don't Need Roads, and obviously Back to the Future reference, but I'm going to reference Opportunity, who is very quietly getting winners. And this horse actually is one of two that have been on wet tracks for Opportunity. This one broke the maiden in an off-the-turf event at Delaware, was quite okay in the opening debut performance, which was also off the turf in August. And then there's a second Opportunity out there that has won on a wet track. So 100% in the money, 2 wins in 3 starts for Opportunity runners. And overall, Opportunity hitting at 21% with his 16 horses that have hit the track. And this keeps up. He will not be in Pennsylvania much longer, frankly. And I was always a big Opportunity fan, and he is clicking. He's got a stake winner already from these first 16 horses, and
yes,
Nobody's talked about him at all. Let's go to the Salima. Here are the fillies, and here's the crazy flip side of the Futurity. There's no MTOs in here.
I know. I looked at it, I'm like, you. Here we go. Yep.
Very strange. So you got to sort of not only just handicap it straight, but then look at these turf runners, thinking who might stay in, and if it does come off.
I know. Yes. So you have to think about that as well. I go with a couple of obvious ones in this race for my first three, Steve. I go with the Chad Brown horse. Again, Into Mischief isn't disrespectful on a wet dirt at all. I was flip-flopping between the Jonathan Thomas and Chad Brown horse. I went with the Chad Brown, so I have the Jonathan Thomas underneath. I don't love this horse. If we do end up going to a wet surface, that is my only caveat on that horse. But with the Mike Maker horse just on the outside, what an honor. I think that horse has a bit of a better chance as far as his breeding suggests, at least, for this honor code filly. You have Victor Carrasco on the outside. That's what I like. That's what I really like to see. And then As far as underneath, I go with the Mike Trombetta horse, and then Majesty's Freedom. That's a local one, 15-1. Hmm. Might like the dirt. That one, they have high hopes about. They like this filly a lot.
Then if you're doing the off the turf game, I suppose. I mean, if Chad Brown, Private Credit goes down there. Into Mischief, Private Credit probably stays in. Certainly nothing wrong with Into Mischief's on the grass, so that's maybe an option.
How about Sharp As Tekka? As Tekka is 27% with his wet dirt progeny. So there we go. There's a nice little off going surprise for you.
And even the dam that LaVie Russ, the Medaglia d'Oro. Philly. So this one, there's plenty of things to like about a wet track for the Gelfenstein homebred that Bernardo Lopez sends out. Lady Azteca, the 4. Callie, I got to push on for Brad Free, but give us one more winner somewhere tomorrow, maybe in the Shalindon or the Turf Cup or the Twixt.
Let me check in the Shalindon really quick. I'll tell you what I like. So I go with the Jamie Ness horse, the Leahy, who, but at 30-1 in the Sheldon, ooh, I go with Golden Eyes. I go with Golden Eyes with Tim Keith underneath. That horse had a bit of a rough go last time out at Pimlico. We're coming second off of the layoff. I like how that horse looks in the morning when I see him on the track. This horse is improving. I think this is a nice step up for him. He might, let's see if Golden Eyes can go along with the company when he steps up to a proper stakes that he belongs in.
Nice. The 7 with Forest Boyce for Tim Keith.
Yep.
Golden Eyes, 30-1. It's a Cali special. Cali.
Don't label that. We'll see. You can label that after that race and how that runs.
Well, we're also looking forward to are you gonna have one of those fisherman gear outfits maybe with the big yellow slicker tomorrow.
The big wellies. I don't have a pair of wellies, but now I guess I need to get a pair, Steve.
Miss Francois, number 2, you, Cali Francois, everybody, and the action back at Laurel, and nice stakes card tomorrow. Cali, I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Steve. Thank you.
Good luck, Cali Francois, everybody. We'll stay right here and top of the hour because Brad Free is getting ready to swing in, and looking forward to Bradley's visit. Talk about opening. It's opening day today, obviously, at Santa Anita. But in addition to opening day, the big weekend with so many terrific stars on the card, and the win in your ins and much more. Brad Free, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, we start off with a bang out here at Santa Anita with 10 stakes races this weekend. Several have Breeders' Cup implications, and looking forward to seeing how some of these races unfold.
Well, and you know, between the win in your ins, and particularly for the 2-year-old races, and you know, the main track activity will come next week. But you look at particularly the turf action, the City of Hope and the John Henry. I assume we're not going to have to worry about wet weather. The downhill event for the Eddie D. So turf, a very big part of this opening, and also the Unzip Me for the girls. Turf, a big part of the opening day action. The Zenyatta on Sunday and more. We'll talk about everything. Let's start, Brad, with the feature, actually. Let's go to the grade 1, and here is the Awesome Again. And yesterday when I went through the field, I said they rounded up the usual suspects.
Yeah, they rounded up the usual suspects, who all got drilled last time out by a freak. That was Flightline winning the Pacific Classic by more than 19 lengths. Country Grammar ran second in the Pacific Classic, and he ran okay. Obviously, nobody's going to beat Flightline in that race, but Country Grammar is the horse to beat in the Awesome Again. There are a couple horses in here that I'm really interested in seeing how they perform and maybe even bet on, including Express Train. He needed the start badly in the Pacific Classic. Trainer John Sheriffs is adamant that he is as good now coming out of that race as he was this winter when he won 3 consecutive graded stakes, including the Santa Anita Handicap. Royal Ship is a contender. He finished 3rd in the Pacific Classic. But the one horse that I'm really intrigued by, and he might be worth a bet at a price, and I don't even know if he's as good this year as he was last year. His form would suggest he's not. But I'm referring to number 5, Tripoli. He's listed at 8-1. He won the Pacific Classic a year ago, and then he tailed off. He underwent a procedure for knee spurring in the winter, and Sadler, his trainer John Sadler, thought that his 5-year-old season was really going to be a smashing success. He ran well in his comeback in the American. It was a good, solid 4th-place prep, and then he bombed in the San Diego. He came out of the race sick. That knocked him out of contention for the Pacific Classic. Not that Sadler would have ever run him against Flightline anyway, but he was sick in the San Diego, so he had an alibi there. Sadler entered him in the Del Mar Handicap. He thought wisely to scratch him because he thinks the Tripoli is better on dirt. Tripoli has trained very, very well coming out of the Del Mar meet, and Sadler believes that we're going to see what he was quoted in my story, the quote, good Tripoli. And the good Tripoli, the Tripoli who earned thoroughbred numbers of minus a half last summer in 2021, is fast enough to win the Awesome again. I picked him third. I think that Country Grammar and Express Train are more accomplished and more reliable. But at 8-1, I'm very interested in Tripoli returning to form. So that's the gamble for me in the Awesome again. But it goes through Country Grammar, Express Train, and Royal Ship. Those are the three favorites in this mile 1/8. It's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I don't know, if you win this race, you get to go up against Flightline and Life is Good. So it's a tough sell. But a good, solid, interesting race with eight runners, four of them trained by Baffert.
Let's back it up to where the stakes start on the card. And action starts at 12:30 Pacific. And so 1:34 Pacific, 4:34 Eastern for the John Henry. And when I went through these fields, Brad, yesterday for everybody, the incredible... And now you got to call Phil D'Amato just dominant on the turf. It's amazing that a guy that really kind of came up under a old fashioned claim and patch him up trainer in Mike Mitchell that his prowess and his success has been so grass oriented.
Well, Phil D'Amato has established his stable as the top grass stable in California, no doubt about it. And somebody needed to fill the void. After trainer Bobby Frankel passed away and Judmont stopped sending their good grass horses to California, there was a huge void in the division, and D'Amato has stepped in, purchased these European horses with modest form over there, and turned them into stakes winners here in California. And yeah, D'Amato is the turf guy. Baffert's the dirt guy. D'Amato is the turf guy. And D'Amato has three of the six runners in the John Henry, including the morning light favorite Gold Phoenix, who won the Del Mar Handicap last time out. Typically, when a horse wins a win and you're in race for the Breeders' Cup, like Gold Phoenix did, he's now eligible fees paid berth for the Breeders' Cup turf. A lot of guys just go into defensive mode and don't run them again until the Breeders' Cup. But in the case of Gold Phoenix, D'Amato says this horse, he loves to race. He thrives on activity. And since he has no chance, in my opinion, in the Breeders' Cup turf, why not run him back in the John Henry?
Yep.
He's the 2-1 favorite. But I think D'Amato's other horse, Master of Foxhounds, is the more probable winner of the John Henry. The pace scenario is entirely different. He shortens to a mile and 1/4, and they begin this race on the hill, so it's not even a true mile and 1/4 race. Master of Foxhounds could fall into the lead. His fifth place finish last time out behind Gold Phoenix was a lot better than it looked. It was a closers-dominated race. But D'Amato has this race surrounded. Master of Foxhounds, my top choice. He's the 5-2 second choice over, and Gold Phoenix is the favorite. D'Amato also entered cash equity a first-time gelding. So, yeah, D'Amato is the guy on grass.
The next, there's an allowance in between the John Henry and the City of Hope, and the City of Hope is intriguing. Beyond Brilliant, 6-5 favorite, 15-1 on Tarantino, seems a little garish. Iridio from Marcelo Polanco, and here's Phil with both Prince Obama, who's 6-1, the 5, and the 1 on the rail, Catkin Peak, with Umberto Rispoli.
I will be surprised if Beyond Brilliant does not win this race. He's the only front runner in the field. I know you can look through his form and go, well, geez, he wants to go a mile 1/8. He wants to go a mile 1/4. His 1 mile races are not that good. I respectfully would disagree with that argument because to me, his short races have been outstanding, including the Grade 1 Kilroe Mile in March at Santa Anita. He was dogged through a 45-2, 109-1, and hung tough until the closing strides when three closers came and gobbled him up. He won't be going 45-109 on Saturday. Beyond Brilliant is going to fall into the lead. He should be coasting up on the front end, and I think he's long gone as the 6-5 favorite. He had a little setback this summer, Beyond Brilliant did. He was training one morning. There was an incident on the track, and a horse came the wrong way. Beyond Brilliant propped, and he wrenched an ankle. He was supposed to run in the Del Mar Handicap. He wrenched an ankle, and it turned out to be a relatively minor setback. He was back working a week and a half later, and Beyond Brilliant is fresh. He's fast. He's the lone speed. I think he's long gone at a short price. Prince Obama, you mentioned him, Steve. He's an interesting horse going from a one other than into a graded stake. His one other than win was visually impressive, and D'Amato says he was only 90% cranked. He is a horse on his way up. He's not certainly as accomplished as D'Amato's other horse, Cathkin Peak, but Prince Obama has a chance to maybe slip through the cracks. I don't think he can beat Beyond Brilliant, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Prince Obama come along and complete the exacta.
Let's talk about the Santa Anita Sprint Handicap, and this is fun. And I, you know, Forbidden Kingdom showing up in this spot and being made 9-5 favorite by John White, and I love turnbacks and all, but I was a little surprised, and I do see him being kind of, you know, touted or tabbed as a universal good thing in here, and I don't know if I agree readily.
Well, I think he's the horse to beat, but I have no interest at all wagering on Forbidden Kingdom as the 9-5 favorite.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions to answer. He's coming in off a layoff. Mandela won this race 3 years ago with another 3-year-old coming in off a layoff. That was Omaha Beach. Forbidden Kingdom has had his share of complications since his good form in winter. He had a throat ulcer coming out of the Santa Anita Derby. He colicked and was hospitalized for a couple days in summer. He had a horrible workout on September 17th in which he had a foot problem. But since then, he's come back to drill a bullet 6 furlongs on the 23rd. He actually blew out 3 furlongs again a couple days ago. To me, he's the horse to beat. He's really the most promising horse in the field. But you have the layoff, facing older for the first time, and perhaps even more important, there are speed horses to his outside. Kid Corleone and Toto Fino are fast horses, and Forbidden Kingdom from post number 2, I can see him under severe pace pressure. Maybe he's going to be good enough late in his 3-year-old season to shake off those other front runners and win this race. I'm looking forward to his comeback. I think he's the horse to beat, but he has underlay written all over him, Forbidden Kingdom does.
Turning to the Eddie D, and boy, I saw a horse on John's line in here, and I was licking my chops. I'll take Coulthard at 6-1 for as much as I can muster.
I don't blame you. He's a good horse, and he is a better horse since he was gelded. He was gelded prior to his July 30th comeback, and another Phil D'Amato trainee on grass, and D'Amato said, it's in my words, it's night and day. He's a better horse since he was gelded. He had a nice two other than win. He finished third in the Green Flash in another improved effort. He got a 2 3/4 on Thoroughgraph in that race. And Coulthard is coming into this race sharp, getting better, and there's no telling how good he is. I don't think he's the most probable winner, but at 6-1, he is certainly intriguing. I thought that the runner-up in the Green Flash, who finished actually in front of Coulthard, ran a much better race than it looks on paper. I'm referring to number 1, Lane Way. He had severe traffic trouble on the far turn. He was blocked. He was shuffled. He lost position. And then for the final quarter mile, all he did was really just follow Lieutenant Dan down on the inside. The last quarter mile was trouble-free. But he had significant trouble on the turn, Lane Way did, and ran well anyway. He's going to be coming from out of it. It's 6.5 on the hill. And Laneway is a contender. I think that D'Amato's program favorite, Gregorian Chant, is the proper favorite in this race. He has won on the hill. He actually defeated Bran in an allowance race in March, and we saw that Bran has emerged as a potential Breeders' Cup turf candidate. He won a win and you're in at Kentucky Downs a couple weeks ago. So Gregorian Chant, the horse to beat. Laneway will run well, and I also expect Coulthard to do the same, a good horse since he's been gelded.
And as before we move on and touch on quickly some of the Sunday action, I will mention Jack Sisterson, who grew up in Doug O'Neill's shadow and on that shed row, knows what it takes to win a race down the hill. Tango, Tango, Tango on the cutback in the open air outside box in the Marty McGee, where the air is fresh and clear, with Kyle Frey. Very, very interesting at 8-1. How about that 45-second flat bullet the other day?
Yeah, you think he might be on his toes, Jordan, from a mile and 3/8 to 6.5. You know, I wouldn't talk anybody off an 8-1 shot. It's been a little bit of a slow season for Sisterson. They didn't have a whole lot of success down at Del Mar, and it's a tough go. You know, when you relocate from a different circuit to California, it can take a while before you pick up any momentum. I hope Jack does. He's a really good guy. Terrific guy to talk with, and I hope that Tango runs well. I won't be having any money on him myself.
Brad Free with us just another minute or two before colleague Dave Grenig joins us in New York on Sunday, a mile turf race, and there's some pricey players in here, including Simon Callahan for Mrs. Tabor, $600,000 Street Sons Philly, 4th Street. There's Jennifer's Delight for the Warrens, a Flaxman-bred City of Light, who is getting plenty of turf winners. That's an interesting horse. We don't have the line yet, and Brad's picks will be up later. I'm not going to skip over the Zenyatta, but there's an entry on this card Sunday, Brad, that we have to talk about. And you know where I'm going. Speedboat Beach turns up in the speakeasy.
Yeah, he does turn up in the speakeasy. And when he steps onto the grass course, it'll be the first time that he's been on grass, you know, since he was a yearling, probably. He's trained by Bob Baffert. Speedboat Beach won his career debut on dirt at Del Mar with an unbelievable 104 buyer speed figure, defeating his stablemate Hijazi. He has trained super since then. The uncertainty, there's a couple of them actually. He's never been on grass. He's never worked on grass nor galloped on grass. He's the son of Bayern. Bayern progeny have won 14% on turf. That's okay. And if he reproduces his dirt form on grass, I think he'll win this race. But beyond the uncertainty with regards to the surface, he's drawn outside. And there's some other fast horses in here. Heledic is fast. So is Straighten Up, who is quick. These two front runners are going to make things tough. At least Speedboat Beach is drawn outside. Yeah, he could lose ground out there, but he might just simply be superior to the rest of the field. So Speedboat Beach, this is a win and you're in, by the way,
yeah,
for the juvenile turf sprint. And, you know, you don't really think of Baffert as a grass trainer, but he might have one here in Speedboat Beach. I think he's going to be, he should be very tough to beat if he can overcome those challenges I mentioned earlier. I want to make one real quick point here, Steve, about number two, Straighten Up. I have been asking Santa Anita management for the last 2 weeks and also Jerry Hollendorfer for the last month, what's the situation with regards to Santa Anita? Is Santa Anita going to continue to ban Hollendorfer from its premises? They would not give me any answers because they were under instructions from the judge in their settlement to not speak to anybody regarding any of the forward movement. Well, as it turns out, it's clear now what has happened. Hollendorfer must still be banned from Santa Anita because Straighten Up, who ran 3 times for Hollendorfer, is now trained by Mike Pipey for the Speakeasy Stakes. So there's your answer. Apparently, it appears that Hollendorfer's ban from Santa Anita remains in effect through the fall meet, at least.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, the other action I mentioned, the Zenyatta, speaking of wins and urines, there's also the Chili. And I'm sure when we talk to Hammer later, we will talk about the wonderful late Sherwood Chillingworth and Chili, affectionately known as the world's worst gambler, and always asking for a push and never cashing a ticket.
Worst gambler, but one of the nicest
that's for sure
ever meet in racing. He was the head of the Oak Tree Racing Association for many years. I knew him fairly well. Just a great guy. And it's, you know, this race used to be named the LA Woman. That was a Rick Hammerly deal. I love that name, the LA Woman Stakes. but I certainly respect the change to Sherwood, the Chillingworth Stakes, in honor of Sherwin Chillingworth. So glad to have the race named after Sherwood Chillingworth, and looking forward to see if Cece can return to form. She is coming off the worst race of her career. It was in the Grade One Ballerina, and she finished fifth by 11 lengths as the 3-2 favorite. She trained well since then. Her trainer, Michael McCarthy, thinks she had some excuses back there. She drew the rail, got dirt in her face, did not like the racetrack, and she completely bombed. Cece should win the Chillingworth, and if she does, she's going to go back to Keeneland and try to win the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint for the second straight year. I have the question from a parimutuel perspective is, do you really want to take a short price on a veteran mare, 6-year-old mare, coming off the worst race of her career? I'm a little leery. I know that, you know, Cece's going to probably, and she should win this race, but she does have some questions to answer in an attempt to return to form.
Finally, five-horse field in the Zenyatta. Soothsay trying to right the ship after a dreadful return in the Clement Hirsch, but that was also, you know, that was a Grade One and serious competition, and she had been away over a year. You've got, I don't know, Awake at Midnight, the 3-year-old filly trying Elders. Same story for the Torrey Pines winner, Midnight Memories. Samurai Charm is, you know, okay. Kind of a milquetoast version of the Zenyatta.
Yeah, that's really the politically correct way of phrasing it. It's not a good field. And I think that Midnight Memories, in my opinion, is the horse to beat. Soothsay was dead short when she ran in the Clement Hirsch. And trainer Richard Mandela acknowledged as much. He said he did not have her prepared as much as he would like. She had been fighting a nasty splint injury setback for a long time. He finally got her to the races, but she needed the start. She's done well since then. I'm not sure really how fast she is, because her numbers would suggest she's merely an allowance filly. You could probably say the same for most in this field. Midnight Memories, lightly raced. She's the first colt or filly sired by Mastery to win a stake race. She went wire to wire in the Grade 3 Torrey Pines last time out, and I think she's the horse to beat, but I would be surprised if the Zenyatta had any influence whatsoever on the Breeders' Cup distaff a month from now at Keeneland.
Brad Free, everybody, and getting ready to go. Brad Free won on Twitter, but in the pages of the Daily Racing Forum. Brad, I appreciate this. We'll check in as we get further into the meet and toward the cup.
I look forward to it, Steve. Talk to you soon.
The great Brad Free, everybody, and, of course, the author of Handicapping 101. For those of you that, between Handicapping 101 and Rich Eng's Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, you do have to wait for the new revised version, though, of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. Because there is going to be the new one here coming out soon enough in the fall. We're going to reach for Dave Grenig. One break today at the bottom of Think of Hour 2. That'll be our only, time out on what is a busy, and we fell behind a little bit here just now, but we'll try to make it up as we go. Certainly, Brad, there was too much good stuff, with Brad Free to catch up. And now we bring to the fore Dave Grenig, his colleague from the pages of the Daily Racing Forum, America's Turf Authority since.
What's up, Steve?
Dave, good morning. Big weekend. Obviously, we look to these next couple of days, and plenty of intrigue. The return here of Life is Good, who it was going to be hard to line people up against him. The Miss Griot and the Champagne, and then the corresponding opportunities for the 2-year-olds on Sunday, and a terrific Belmont Turf Sprint as well. Not much to talk about with the Woodward, but let's get into it.
Where do you want to start, Steve?
Woodward first, and just, you know.
3 words in the Woodward: life is good. it's going to be a paid public workout, tomorrow morning in California, flight line will have a workout in the morning, and then, you know, in the afternoon, Life is Good will have a workout, and he'll have to deal with a sloppy track most likely. But, somebody asked me the other day, you know, Life is Good, he should go in the dirt mile, right? Because if he wins the Breeders' Cup Classic and loses, he'll lose his value. Or I was like, really? I said, if he loses the Woodward, he loses value. He said, if he gets beat the Breeders' Cup Classic, he can lose the value.
No.
The whole thing is ridiculous. But anyway, they just, like you said, they couldn't find anybody to line up against them. I don't understand horsemen. So, you know, let's go to the Lucas Classic and run when we have four good horses. And let me, but we'll stay out of the Woodward when we have one good horse. But, you know, they're smarter than me, so I don't know. But Life is Good should get the variable being the wet track, probably the wet track, but hopefully he just gets his prep in there, and we can all move on to what everyone wants to see on November 5th.
Well,
in the Miss Grillo is, you know, again, it's subject to weather, right? I mean, I'm not sure. Naira pays three weather services, and they decided to go Cardin's races on the grass anyway, and I'm not sure what they're watching or what's going on there, but hopefully they can get the Miss Grillo in and on. And you know, be your best has been as impressive to me as anyone in the division that I've seen so far, especially the PG Johnson, where, you know, Jose Ortiz was just waiting for the room to open up on the rail, and when it did, she really kicked on and made some horses that were well regarded by their connections look just average. And that was following up a pretty solid maiden victory, over Firm Ground. The PG Johnson was run over ground labeled good. And, you know, it'll probably be good or less than that tomorrow. She's got an outside post, but it's only a 6-horse field. Shouldn't be that daunting. And, I think there's some decent horses in here. Georgie Abreu's got two nice ones, Alluring Angel and Georgie mm-hmm. Spirit. They're both stretching out from sprints, but, that's what you try at this time of year. Chad Brown, I mean, he's won this race 8 times since 2008, and he's got Free Look, who was I thought made a pretty eye catching move in her maiden victory, because she did get beat in her debut by Be Your Best. So that race, that race by Be Your Best was validated not only by Be Your Best, but by Free Look coming back and winning her maiden, kind of impressive.
Agreed, and I'm glad you mentioned the Abreu players, because I thought they both are okay. George's Spirit off the maiden win and stretching out, and Alluring Angel doing the same thing. This actually broke the maiden at Saratoga and then ran a terrific race in the Untappable. I was there for that at Kentucky Downs for Larry Goichman. I'm sure they'll do everything they can to keep these two stakes on the grass, Dave, the Miss Grillo and the Turf Sprint.
I would think so, yeah. I think they're both on different courses, so I think if you can get the one on each course, these are the runs. These are the ones you get. It's unfortunate because the Belmont Turf Sprint came up a very challenging race, good handicapping puzzle. If you have an opinion, you should get paid. I don't know that I have a very strong opinion. I'm not sure that, I don't know if Finn White Duke transfers that form from Saratoga to here. I'm not sure that he gave you three solid races in a short span of time up there. Now he's got to come back and do it on a course. He did win over this course, but it was against State Breds going long. I'm not sure how that translates into this wide open field coming off some really, it was a hard race, the Lucky Coin. He had a run. And I remember Johnny saying he had to sort of get into that horse maybe earlier than he wanted to. And, got the job done that day. But, how does that work going forward? Conversely, Dancing Buck comes back, who got beat a nose in that race, ran terrific. Dancing Buck comes back on a course that he's won on twice, including at least one time when it was labeled good. So we know he can handle a little bit of give in the ground. He's in excellent form as well. His last three starts have been terrific. And he's won twice at 6 furlongs. So I kind of like Dancing Buck. You know, the horse that's going to get overlooked here for a couple reasons is Scuttlebuzz. Scuttlebuzz, his form is dirtied up by running, in a mile race against the City Man. I think a mile is probably too far for him. Then he went to Parks and tried to catch a nice spot for him, but it was rained off the grass. So his form, and three back, he ran in the Grade 1 Jiper. So he's back at Aqueduct where he's 4-for-4. He finished up the year last, last fall with 2 wins in 2 weeks over the Aqueduct Turf course. They were both solid efforts, and I think they're good enough, especially the second one I thought was good enough to compete in a stakes race like this. So, you know, I think, again, I think his form is going to be overlooked because he's going to be overlooked because of his recent dirtied up form and the fact he's in post 12.
No, I've got everybody you mentioned with a little, you know, with either a little dollar sign or some sort of a question. I yes and yes has got my attention plenty from Dave Donk as well. Well, the Champagne. Let's talk about the Champagne and the Frisette together. Champagne Saturday, Frisette on Sunday. The Mile Challenge, two of the great historic races for juveniles in the eastern half of the country, and Verifying was made the favorite on David's line, but I thought Top Recruit from Maker, a return to that juvenile effort, is going to play well, and there's nothing wrong with Gulfport either. Those are obviously the three major players to me.
Yeah, you know, the race changed for me. I thought, Fort, you know, as of Tuesday, I had Forte in the race, and then they called an audible, and they're saying that they're going to the Breeders' Futurity next week. Interesting move, especially since there's a whole lot of jockeying going on with jockeys next week because they're all over the place. There's four tracks that are running major races next Saturday, and you know you're going to see a lot of guys riding horses that they haven't ridden before because their regular rider is committed to be in another state, perhaps another country. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out. But this it made this race a wide open affair. Verifying, like you know, Verifying lived up to the pedigree and the price when he won the Travers Day maiden race. He's a half to midnight Bizou, and the best part of the race to me was the last part of the race, which bodes well going out a mile from the three quarters. But watching Top Recruit's performance in the juvenile at Ellis Park was pretty impressive. I mean, you know, he was on the inside, got passed by Curly Jack. And then came back and beat him. And then they finished 15 lengths ahead of the rest of the field. Curly Jack comes back and wins the Iroquois. And then the fourth place horse from that race, a horse named Frosted Departure, won something that I haven't seen in a while, a 2-year-old allowance race, and won by 9 1/4 lengths. So that race got Verified. At the draw, he picks up Irad Ortiz, which is huge. He had Castellano named, which is no slouch, but when Irad becomes available, you know, you go to him, and that's a big pickup there. And he's got experience. He's got three races under his belt, as does Andiamo a Firenze. And the Andiamo a Firenze, what you like about him is that he's won twice on a wet track already, although both wins were against state prints. And he's got the rail, which you don't really love either. But it's a kind of a wide-open race. And even Champion's Dream for Gargan, I thought, you know, talking to Danny earlier in the week, he said that he didn't think he had the horse ready to run his best at that point. And I thought it was a very solid effort against. So it was, you know, I know I wrote it was the slowest of the 3 7-furlong races run that day, but it wasn't that slow. It was just like 10 100s off the next slowest race. Gulfport, I don't know what to do with Gulfport. You know, this horse looked like an absolute superstar after his first 2 races. I know he had a bit of trouble when he ran against Damon's Mound in the Saratoga Special. The Hopeful, did he not like going 7? No. I know Steve is like, Steve Asperson said, and I know you.
Well, that looked like, I think that was the end of, we lost Dave there, and so let's get him back. I could tell when he had that first, there was that little hiccup. I thought, oh boy, I think his call's going to drop. There we go. Now he's back. There we go. Yeah.
917-453.
Yeah. No good. That's Dave's cell phone. I mean his mailbox. I wanted to. Yeah, we.
Some of my best stuff. I can't believe that.
No, I knew there was like a little something. It was a waiver, and I knew you were dropping, and there you went. No, you were talking about Gulfport, and yeah, I think we ride it out with him. I don't think we write him off just yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I just don't know how far he wants to go. This might be, I'm not going to call him Jackie's Warrior, but Jackie's Warrior type. You know, as we get longer, I don't know that he's going to necessarily get better. but we'll see. There's some new faces in here that we haven't seen in Stakes Company yet that, you know, we'll get a chance to get a line on how good they are. You know, that's being verifying Champions Dream. And even Andiamo of friends in an open race. I mean, although, you know, he didn't run terrible in Stanford. I know everybody was, not everybody. Most horsemen were not happy with the Saratoga track the first couple of weeks. And, you know, this horse did finish in front of Forte, who did come back and win the hopeful nicely and would have been a favorite in this spot. But, the only horse I guess I have a question about is Blazing Sevens, because I don't necessarily think he liked the slop when he was, you know, beaten 12 lengths by Forte in the hopeful. So you wonder, do they call an audible and go down to Keeneland for the Breeders' Street Charity if the track does come up sloppy? I don't know.
Well, we'll watch and hope for the best. Just talked about the situation in Maryland too with Cali, because they've got the state cards with important 2-year-old turf racing as well. So we'll watch and see what gives on Sunday. I'm going to assume we'll be free and clear. But Dave, quick advance on the Frizette and Pilgrim.
Frizette came up, I think, a really solid race. He had some very good 2-year-old fillies win up there in Saratoga this year. At least I visually impressive. You're My Girl, she won by 14. The Great Baby won by 8. Chocolate Gelato won by 8.5 in her second start, which I think is an advantage having 2 starts. Leave No Trace comes out of an auction race and then wins a Grade 1 Spinaway against 9 rivals. It's a very solid race. I just like the progression that Chocolate Gelato made from first start to second start. Again, opening day, the track was very deep and she looked like she struggled over it. And then when you watch how she was moving and how Irad wasn't moving in the second start, I just thought she was really impressive. And I think she is one that looks to me that as we get longer, she could get better. Look, Leave No Trace had a really nice workout here on Sunday. She looks like she's held her form well, and you know, she warrants all the respect. Unfortunately, if you weren't on board for the 14-1 and the spin away, you're probably not going to get that on Sunday. The Pilgrim, you know, similar to the Miss Grillo. I mean, this is a wide open spot here. I was impressed with Chad's colt. I'm Very Busy. I liked his win first time out. I thought Lachaise for the New York bred for Georgia Bray was good first time out, and you know, That was a sizable field. Leah Giamatti's horse, Fly Right, was just, you know, pissed off a neck by General Jim, who I think is potentially a nice horse. But what's going to happen with soft turf, or potentially it comes off, because, you know, the weather just doesn't look that great. If it comes off, I guess I'm looking at Major Dude just because of the experience factor on the dirt. I do remember, I was looking this up today, 2009, Escondereo won the off-the-turf Pilgrim for Todd. So maybe Major Dude would do the same if it were to come off. And then Battle of Normandy is live in that spot. In that spot also, he just got nailed in the with anticipation by Bobbio.
There's the weekend in New York, and next week we'll talk about the Joe Hirsch, the Matron, the Vaz, the Beldame, of course, and more, the Futurity. Plenty to come here. Belmont at Aqueduct, the fall championship meet in South Ozone Park. David, I appreciate it.
Okay, Steve. Good to talk to you.
Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig on your Twitter machine. We're going to quickly get Shap in here, and then we'll take our one break of the morning. Try to get... All right, we're not terrible. We're 8 minutes behind. We will test my ability to manage this this broadcast, and you know, as not ringleaders. What do they call the guy? Yeah, it's a ringleader. The ringleader, right? The circus. Not that there's any circuses anymore. I loved the circus growing up. Scott Shapiro joins us. Scott, did you ever see Ringling Brothers?
I did see the Ringling Brothers, I think, at the Old Spectrum a couple of times.
Nice! Nice! In the Spectrum! Oh, my God, that's awesome. That is awesome. Thank you, Casey. Ringmaster. That's right. There we go. This is how the show gets off the track. For those of you that are in the Northeast, and I don't know if it's reopened because during COVID it was closed. I wanted to bring Tina to the Barnum Museum in Bridgeport. which is the greatest. If you're if you're a Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey, if you're a circus fan from, you know, from when you could go, the Barnum Museum is wonderful, but they were closed during COVID, and I don't know if they've reopened, but it's in Bridgeport. In fact, you see it right on the turnpike, right on 91. You don't realize you're seeing it, but that sort of almost Byzantine. It's almost an Orthodox church kind of a look with turrets. That's the Barnum Museum, and it's spectacular. So there's your aside for the day, everybody. Shap, so ridiculous. I don't know what's wrong with me. This is just my makeup. let's get what are you looking at today? We got so many good races, and Churchill a big part of it, but I'm sure you looked at a bunch of things.
Yeah, I mean, mostly focused on Churchill, with it being the final 3 days of the short September meet here. Really good card. Good card today, really good one tomorrow with a couple of big stakes races. And I looked at the Awesome again at San Anita a little bit. Got to get to some of the other races later on this morning, pardon me. But yeah, my main focus was Churchill, of course, with me being out here. And the stakes races, I thought came up fun, especially, I mean, the ACAC, which I didn't really see the probables, you know, creating a field like this, but it really came together well. Looks like a lot of folks want to try to earn that spot into the dirt mile at Keeneland, obviously, in early November, but really a fun race, led by Speaker's Corner, of course. I don't know if you got a chance to take a look at this one, but he's even money, and if he runs back to his best efforts, he'll probably be very tough to beat on the front end. But I thought there were other ways to go in here to create, you know, better value options in a pretty good bunch.
Well, lay it out. We talked about it with Marty, and we both kind of talked about Twilight Blue being a value player.
Man, I've been a big fan of that horse for a long time now. He's done very little wrong, excuse me, this year, with 3 wins and 2 seconds. And the 1 second was a nose beat to Folsom, where Folsom was best, but Twilight Blue really ran hard to the wire. It'll be interesting to see how he handles a turn back to a one-turn mile after the mile and 3/16 for Larnet, but should get a good trip from out there. I did land on Folsom in the end, the horse that beat him a couple back. Now, I'm not overly confident that he'll get the right race shape in here. You know, Speaker's Corner from the inside, definitely going to go. And then you've got Questions. I don't think Untreated's fast enough to go with Speaker's Corner. You've got Injunction and then maybe Twilight Blue. So I'm a little bit concerned about Speaker's Corner getting loose. But, man, Folsom has such a strong turn of foot. He loves it here at Churchill. I think it'll be even stronger at the one-turn mile. He appears to be going as good as ever. The lack of Lasix is a little bit of a concern here, but I just think he's going to be rolling late if there's any sort of honest pace. And we have seen the track play more fair over the last few days, but for the most part, it's been an outside off the pace type track, which would definitely benefit Folsom. We should get to 5-1, so I pick Folsom over Speaker's Corner, and then Twilight Blue for third with 3 Technique for fourth. I think this is a horse that has kind of reinvented himself. Remember, good 2-year-old, right, for Jeremiah Englehart, fell out of form, but since Jason Cook has had him here at Churchill, he upset the apple cart in the next go at almost 37-1, and then, boy, did he run well losing to Cody's Wish. It looked like he was going to beat Cody's Wish that day. Obviously, Cody's Wish coming back to beat Jackie's Warrior in the 4-go. So some serious running lines there. So I wouldn't leave 3 Technique out either if you're spreading deep in horizontal wagers or if you're looking for horses to use underneath the exotics.
How about the Lucas?
I think Happy Saver is the best horse in this race. And I think he'll get the right race shape. You've got Art Collector on the inside, Hot Rod Charlie on the outside. Art Collector, kind of the opposite of Hot Rod Charlie in the fact that he has a nose for the wire. He's won more than half of his starts, but, you know, a little bit of a class check here. He's kind of, you know, he's won some big races, but kind of second tier competition in terms of the top older handicap horses, at least the way I see it. And then Hot Rod Charlie, who's taken on, you know, a lot of the best horses, but has really struggled to finish the deal throughout much of his career, unless he's on the front end. The Haskell last year obviously being the exception, but he was, you know, DQ'd. So I think they could present a honest early pace. And I just think Happy Saber, I'm a little tiny bit worried, Steve, that he just keeps running second. But the horses he's running second to would all be heavy favorites in here. You know, Life Is Good, Flight Line, Olympiad, Maxfield. And the mile and an ace should work out great. So I like Happy Saber in this spot. I picked it Happy Saber over Hot Rod Charlie over Art Collector. And it'll be fun to see Rich Strike take on the older horses for the first time. We know he has an affinity for this racetrack. I think it's a big challenge for him, though. And, maybe he can run on and get a piece. But I do prefer the older runners to him.
Fair enough. Any other spots on the card?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple of spots in the non-stakes events would be in race four. I like American Pure. It's just a $20,000 beaten claimer at the one-turn mile, but I think this horse's form a little bit dirtied up. Mike Maker claimed from Brad Cox at Saratoga at the beginning of the meet for $25,000. In that race that he claimed this colt out of, really bad start, really took him out of the race, forgivable effort. And then Maker, what she often does, moved this one to the turf, another really poor trip. And it doesn't really show up in the running lines on the Brisnet past performances, but this horse was really buried on the inside and never got to run. Now you get Tyler Gaffleone on the cutback, should get a pretty honest pace and a pretty suspect group. So American Pure as the second choice for me in race four, which starts off a middle pick four from races four through eight, which looks like a pretty challenging one. And then in race seven, a maiden special weight as we get it stretch out to a mile and a 16th for two-year-olds. Thought it was a really competitive bunch, but we're going to get a lot of opportunities, Steve, I think, when we get to Keeneland and maybe later on in November meet to take advantage of, you know, the biased racetrack we saw here at Churchill for a number of days, where being on the inside, unlike most times, was definitely not the place to be. And that's where number six Record Point was in his second start for the coach. First start for the coach usually doesn't go well for two-year-olds. Very, very low numbers with firsters. But this horse ran a good third that day and then came back here on September 16th for his second start. And he was along the rail all throughout that race, and the outside was a clear place to be on September 16th, and I thought he fought on very well to be beaten just two lengths when finishing fourth, considering he was on the wrong part of the track. Now he's in a middle post. You get Rafael Bejarano up for the first time. I would look for a mid-pack trip, and I like Record Point at 4-1 in race seven, which kicks off the late pick five.
Well, that's some good insight. Very good. All right, out of town.
The only out-of-town play I have is in the Awesome Again, where I think I definitely think that Country Grammar is the horse to beat. I'm not giving anybody anything crazy there, but I don't know if he's the same horse, and it's going to be interesting to see how all of these horses that battled with, or didn't battle with, but went into the starting gate with Flightline and the Pacific Classic bounce back. Are they going to, you know, did they get their heart ripped out by getting beat so bad, or was it just kind of taken at face value? But it was interesting that John Sheriff's sent Express Train into that race off the layoff. Last year, he gave him the race in the San Diego. He won it and didn't run well in the Pacific Classic, so maybe he was thinking sending him in fresh like he was a better option. But, you know, I just struggle to get a lot out of or take anything away from the horse. You know, he's a horse that likes to be sitting up close, but the way Flightline ran that day, he really never got a chance to run too significantly. But he loves it at Santa Anita. I think the mile and an eighth is a really good distance for him. And he should be ready to fire a big shot second off the bench. So I'll take Express Train, and where it looks to be an honest pace with high connection to fund it and slow down Andy. Hopefully Victor Espinoza can get into that second tier and get back to the winner's circle.
Excellent. All right.
I guess that's about it. Pretty good card today. I don't have anything too creative. I'm going to build my early horizontals around number one, Dr. Perry, in the third. He's going to be the favorite in there, but I just think second start off the bench for Steve Asmussen exits a race, and Ellis, where the top two finishers both came back to win already at this meet, shook off the rust for his first start as a three-year-old. ran a couple of really good races as a two-year-old for Steve, and I just think he's the class of the field and is going to show it in the third. But he's not going to be much of a price, but I'll be building my early horizontal wagers around him.
Dr. Berry with Tyler Gaffleone in the third today. Afternoon card at the Downs as they wrap up and turn everything over to Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup meet. Scott, good luck this weekend. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good one, buddy.
Scott Shapiro, folks, and there you go. Let's take our only break of the morning. Do it right here, quick case, and come right back because we got to roll right into Hammer and Scully and Nick Tamaro, Nate Newby, and Popo. Actually, you know what? We're not in bad shape now that I look at this. All right. The front half was key. I think we're all right because I did not shove in another spot in hour three, so we're good. Yeah, Hammer, Scully, Nick, Nate, and Popo. All right, I'm going to relax. I thought I was, let's see, it's 10:35. Yeah, we're all right. We're all right. Obviously not going to do it today, but while we have a little lead in here to the break, I happened to have watched part of the game leading into the half last night on Amazon. And there's some real thought that to go into what transpired regarding Tua and that concussion protocol. But it obviously, to me, had, you know, some interesting parallels or at least potential lessons or, you know, something to associate with what we have to do as an industry in terms of keeping horses out of harm's way, horses that are vulnerable out of harm's way. And, you know, in a lot of cases, you don't, there's no way to know. You know, there may be, you know, some hints here and there that, you know, track vets, supervisory vets, horsemen, riders, everybody, you know, watches for clues. Here's somebody that everybody knew was in a vulnerable position. I've got to think this a little bit more, but I mean, the first thing I thought about is, you know, here's somebody that can, you know, that can communicate and can be, and they say, we did all the protocols, they passed all the protocols. Okay. That's what you say, but, you know, some very interesting things already have been written this morning. Still trying to connect all the dots to how it relates to what we face, protecting horses. And we can't even put them in, you know, we can't even put them in flak jackets and so forth. Jockeys, we could put the jocks in flak jackets. Taking a break, only one of the morning. It's Twin Spires weekend preview back after this. In fact, I think we'll go to Scully next. All right, here we go.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on?